you, Commissioner.
I was appointed this week.
That's right. So I have Ms. Kelsey Barry, who I introduced yesterday, my colleague. And to my right is Emma Turner. Ryder, sorry. That's been an internal joke about it. My end issue, confusing the two. Yeah, exactly. I can get kicked later. I'm very sorry about that. Emma Turner being the council's 42A report writer, Emma Ryder being the planner for Arthur's Point Land Trustee, and John Edmonds is at the table also giving planning evidence for Coronet Peak Properties, who are a separate submitter, who just follow on from in terms of time slots today. So for Arthur's Point Land Trust, hopefully you've received the pre-filed submissions, some of which I'm conscious is aspects are similar to submissions you've already seen. So I wondered if, rather than go through them, I could just orientate you to the site, to the relief, rather than get into too much more detail. So on page 2 of the submissions, the site owned by my client, Arthur's Point Land Trustee Limited, is surrounded in white. It includes, from up at the road, the existing rural visitor zone, down, which has a already consented hotel on it, which I'll get to in a moment. There's a what we call the mid terrace, which
I was going to ask you, Mr. Stewart, when you talk about the mid terrace, what are you talking about?
Yeah, no, that's a good question, and it's the land. So there's a blue hatched building restriction area down the bottom right. Of the land at which I call the mid terrace, so it's building restriction area 2. So if you go onto page 5, there's a 2 there. So that's referred to building restriction area 2 on the council's notified planning map on page 5.
Is it the terrace below that escarpment?
Yes, that's right. And the reason it's called the mid terrace, not relevant to hearing 3B. But is that the land, which is back on page 2, surrounded in white, has a lower terrace, which is zoned rural and within the ONL. So there's an upper terrace, the mid terrace, which was the subject of stage 1 hearings, and we've had procedural hearings in the Environment Court in relation to scope matters, and then the lower terrace, you can just see it at the bottom right hand corner of the in the white pointed area of the site down the bottom by the right on the lower terrace by the Shotover River.
And just for my edification, my colleagues probably not aware of this, one of your neighbours, one of your clients' neighbours sought to join unsuccessfully. Where are they located as a matter of interest?
My understanding is that they're the party to the town side of the site, so the left,
at the top.
At the top, yeah, that's my understanding. Yeah. Yes, who sought to join fairly late in the piece.
Yes.
is the part of the mid terrace to the east of building restriction area 2, which is in your client's site, is that rural zone?
Yeah, so to orientate to that question, if you go to page 7 of my legal submissions, there's that was part of stage 1 of the ODP, and at stage 1 the panel confirmed the ONL line around the outside of the site, which is it's in very faint writing, it says stage 1 decisions version. On that area of land, and it's the stage 1 decision is medium density residential for what we call the mid terrace.
So the zone medium density residential is part of stage 1.
It's part of stage 1, yes.
Because it wasn't the east zone at that stage.
That's right. So it's the site is relatively artificially separated because of the fact some of it was rural visitor, so wasn't part of stage one. Well, to very complicate things, initially when stage one was notified, rural visitor was shown as a zone on the planning maps, but we won't go there. It through the decisions version is medium density.
The extent of the BRA is as shown on your figure two.
Yes. That's right, stage 3B, medium density. And the my client has an appeal in relation to the stage 1 decision. And it's because at that time it wasn't known what was going to happen to the stage 3 land, so the land that we're talking about at the moment, the appeal supports the decision for the land to go from rural to an urbanised zone, in this case medium density, but seeks either high density residential for that land or rural visitor. Now that rural visitor zone doesn't exist anymore, so there is a live appeal for that land, partially accepting the decision but seeking a further upzoning. And the parties, my client and council, have agreed to put that appeal on hold pending stage 3B, because following this decision, this hearing process, all the decisions will have been made in relation to my client's land.
Yeah.
So just look at page 7 again, where this area is shown.
Mm.
The teal blue shape.
Yes.
That's outside the room. Is that a BRA?
Yeah. So we'll spend a bit of time on that today. There's
two BRAs.
Yeah. There are two BRAs.
No, this is the one that's outside the
The one in stage one? Yes. Yes, that's right. So it's a similar BRA as the one within.
Yes. So we're not going to talk about that one today.
Not today, no.
Okay.
No.
Well, as I understand it, Mr. Leakey, having looked at it again, for the purposes of reviewing your submission on stage three, decided that the BRA off-site, in the stage one land is in the wrong place, and it's the light blue is the notified version, I think, and the darker blue is what Ms. Melsoff would say if she had a free hand.
No, and that would be my submission.
That would be a scope issue, which is
For your background, which then you can then put it out of your mind, that BRA is essentially an area of land that the ONL line follows the outside of my client's land. That's a legal boundary. The BRA is to fill in essentially a gap that the collective landscape evidence was that there needed to be some form of landscape restriction. So the BRA approach was used at that time over that stage one, that stage one land. It's a very steep slope that goes down from the mid terrace to the river.
It's not something that anyone's going to build on anyway.
Very unlikely, in terms of the vast majority of it.
When we did our site visit, we went down the road to the mid terrace and stood effectively at the gate.
Yep.
And then we looked over the edge of the terrace and observed that that was definitely it.
That's definitely the terrace. It's pretty scraggly and there's not much. Well, there's actually quite a bit there in terms of just low-level vegetation. And it's fortunate we don't need to go there because of scope, but the attempt to move that BRA did cause issues for my client in that, for example, it moves it right through an existing building that is there on the mid-terrace. It's gone the other way. That's right, it's gone there. We don't need to go there anyway, but the difference between the light blue and the dark blue is the bit that's outside the scope of this hearing.
Is the
Chowdhury
River, is that an ONF?
Oh, yes, I must say ONL. I think it is an ONF. John, Mr. Emmons will may know.
There's an ONL though, but is
the river itself is an ONF from memory. That's the yellow hatched is the Wahi Tapuna proposed overlay, so we don't need to.
It's all outside of everything.
Yep. So it's a large portion of land which is within this legal title, but outside the scope of this hearing. It's very complicated, and particularly with the staging of the district plan. And then to just orientate the relief, if I could bring your attention to page 5 of my legal submissions, which is the latest position from Ms. Turner in terms of the recommended mapping, because there's been some movement between the notified version and the recommendation. So that's the second map on page 5 of my legal submissions. Ms. Turner has accepted the relief for the upper portion of the site to be high density residential, which is agreed to obviously by my client, given that was sought by my client. My client still remains to be seeking high density residential on the mid terrace that we've been talking about, so the land that is the lighter orange colour on page 5. There is a discrepancy between Ms. Malsop's evidence about what's appropriate within these building restriction areas. They're referred to building restriction areas 3 and 2. Ms. Turner's seeking a non-complying activity for all buildings within those areas. Ms. Malsop's given evidence that some development is appropriate within those areas. And Ms. Malsop has listed what she considers in paragraph 51 of my legal submissions. I'll orientate you to that perhaps now. Listed the activities she considers would be appropriate within the building restriction areas. Maximum building height of 8 metres, lower density of development, recessive building materials, and indigenous landscaping.
Have you got a reference to that?
Yes, it's the... I may not have put it in there, sorry. It's the report attached to Ms. Malsop's evidence in chief. Thank you. Paragraph 3.2.7 of Ms. Malsop's report, page 17.
3.2.7.
It's her recommendation section for Arthur's Point.
So this is in the report attached to her evidence?
Evidence in chief.
And the report
to do with... Yes, that's right, on when it was reporting on what to do about the rural visitor zone.
Yeah,
and Ms. Malsop in that report has identified... there's slightly different shades of sensitivity, high, medium, low, or ability to absorb development. And the building restriction areas are a medium shade. I have got it here. It's figure 6 of her report.
Okay, so that's just the BRA3,
isn't it? My understanding is it's...
Your point just relates to BRA3.
I'll just load the figure. My point relates to both of the BRAs on the land, so 2 and 3. Yes, yep.
So when you say there's a discrepancy within her evidence, what you're referring to a discrepancy between what's in the report attached to her evidence and what's in her evidence on the sheet?
So the discrepancy is between Ms. Malsop, the planning council's planning expert's report, and then the landscape architect, and then what's fallen into the planner's recommendation is a non-complying activity for all buildings. So in my submission there's a disconnect between what the landscape architect, what level of development they're saying is appropriate, which is broadly supported by my client. It's a different way, it's a different approach. I mean, it's essentially more of a medium density type development for those building restriction areas. Whereas in my submission what Ms. Turner, the council's planner, is recommending with a non-complying activity status for buildings doesn't achieve what Ms. Malsop's evidence is saying is appropriate for the site.
That was going to be my question.
That's my assessment of it. That's not how Ms. Mousop describes it. She doesn't give it a zoning type descriptor, but that would be, if I was to pick a zone that it's closest to, it would be an MDR, not an HDR type zone. The building restriction. MDR, yeah, and the MDR, I guess what I'm, it's the height is a big part of that, 8 meters. But it's the use of the tool of a building restriction area is a bit of an unusual approach in my submission because it's a hangover from the operative plan, is my understanding. But it, as a mechanism, it can work, but our submission is seeking to amend the provisions that would sit within it, so within that overlay of the BRA, to be more enabling, to be more consistent with Ms. Mousop's recommendation. So they're the two BRAs. There's been the focus on BRA 2, and then there's the BRA 3, which is up by the main road. It's the knoll, if you like, in a similar situation. Ms. Mousop's recommended her and sort of the level of development she considers appropriate, but it's the recommendation from the Ms. Turner is for non-complying for buildings, so our relief would seek to give effect more to what Ms. Mousop's recommended.
There is a certain irony with this submission, that Ms. Mousop's report would have supported an OL over the Arthur's Point Woods property that you talked to us about yesterday. And I can't recall you pressing on us the wisdom of her views in her report in that context.
No. Mr. Skelton, in that case, had some compelling evidence in regard to the ONL line for Arthur's Point Woods. I mean, in this case, I hear what the Commission is saying. Ms. Mousop's been we're talking about some quite precise controls she's recommended, and I put quite a lot of weight on that. And I just, for quite large areas of land, which are right adjacent to a high-density residential zone, in my submission, it's a much too blunt a tool to have a non-complying activity status for all buildings. No, that's fine. Yes, no trouble. So that's the bulk of the relief. There's Ms. Ryder has recommended or given evidence on an objective and policy framework for Arthur's Point. Now, I describe that as a nice to have for my client. It's Ms. Ryder can get to it in her questions, so I shouldn't speak too much about it. But it's an attempt to deal with the current, or to try and improve the fact that the current Arthur's Point area is an area of development around a relatively high trafficked road, and to introduce some greater amenity to the area. But I'll leave Ms. Ryder to speak to that. The last two bits of relief, one is in relation to the activity status of visitor accommodation, in my submission to move from restricted discretionary to controlled within the high density residential area. And the remaining last piece of relief for my client relates to the height, the maximum building height for the high density sloping sites to make that 12 metres. There are other remaining parts of my submissions I can move through relatively quickly. There is, there's just one point which partially follows on from yesterday but is particularly relevant to Arthur's Point Land Trust as well, which is the relevance of the consented baseline to your assessment of the proposed district plan. And that my legal submissions on the law in this regard from page 9 will be somewhat familiar from yesterday. But I've hopefully, I've had another read of Justice Fogarty's case that we spoke about yesterday, and it had been some time since I read it. So this was the case that and the Commissioner mentioned yesterday, which was at the High Court grappling with two divisions of the Environment Court, one considering a resource consent for Pack and Save in Frankton Flats, Judge Jackson's division, Judge Borthwick's division, deciding on a plan change 19, and the relevance of Judge Jackson's decision on the resource consent to Judge Borthwick's decision on the plan change.
Whether it had been appealed
to the Yes, exactly, and potentially Commissioner Robinson knows what I'm about to say, which is that in my submission that case is questioning more about it, or is giving more context to is a consent likely to be implemented, and in that decision it was quite relevant that the resource consent had been appealed to the Court of Appeal, and Judge Borthwick considered that the Environment Court hadn't put enough weight on the fact that question whether it was likely to be implemented, and therefore held that resource consent shouldn't have formed part of the environment for the purposes of the Judge Borthwick's division's consideration of the plan change. But where that differentiates to this situation in my submission is that it was important that decision was under appeal, and that the High Court did say, and this is at paragraph 112, where some of that land is already the subject of resource consents likely to be implemented, and the plan has not yet been made for that locality, it is natural enough that the territorial authority has to write a plan which accommodates the presence of that activity. So my submission that's particularly relevant here, and in my submission from yesterday, where there's resource consents that are likely to be implemented that aren't under appeal, it's reasonable for you to consider them as part of the environment against which you undertake your broader assessment.
I suppose the asset question is your client seems to have got a succession of resource consents. There's no indication of anything being built but we want to buy.
You're right, there's a layer of a lot of beautiful and some not so beautiful perhaps designs floating around for this site. My clients only own the land. They didn't own the land at the time of the stage one submissions, and it's helpful having Mr. Edmonds here, who's been the planner drafting the most recent application. But my clients had some quite clear goals that they want to achieve from the site, which explains the more recent applications.
The crunch question is the latest consent your client has obtained any more likely to be exercised than the previous ones?
I'd hope so. They've put a lot of work into it. No one can know what the future holds, but that's my understanding of the intent. That's why they've applied for it. That is what they're wanting to build.
I'll make a blinding statement of the obvious that your understanding was not factual evidence of your client's intention.
No, absolutely not. There's no evidence from my client before you on that. But I'd submit that I don't think the panel needs evidence in relation to the question of is a consent likely to be implemented. It's a live consent. It's sitting there. It's not fanciful.
It's been granted.
Yeah.
Interesting submission because I've defended a judicial review where precisely the inverse proposition was run. Mm. So there is a view abroad that it is a factual question that has to be proved.
Mm. It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because in, I think in resource consents every day issued by the council, consent in a 104 sense, I would imagine, or I know from reading them, that consents are considered as likely to be implemented if they've been granted and haven't lapsed. They form part of the baseline of future consents. My submission, that's a relatively common approach.
But if you go back to Hawthorne, Judge Jackson accepted that the Goldsmith's evidence, breaking the habit of a lifetime, actually giving evidence.
He's done it since Hawthorne as well.
as a witness, as opposed to me as counsel, that I think it was any building placed on a provocative basin is almost invariably going to be built on. And the judge accepted that almost as a blinding state of the obvious.
The obvious, yeah, yeah. And yeah, we certainly don't have the evidence of Mr. Goldsmith today. But and I think that the other point to bear in mind on this is that the resource consents aren't, my submission on the relevance of those isn't just in relation to that. It's also in relation to what has been considered by council and by expert landscape witnesses as appropriate for this site historically, albeit under the ODP. Regime.
Absolutely.
Yep. So I've without really going through the submissions, I've gone through the submissions really in terms of the key relief sought. I wonder if I pass to Ms. Ryder, she has a short summary, and then I could answer some questions first, and then pass to Ms. Ryder.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. So my evidence covers my recommendations for the land at 182 Arthur's Point Road. I consider that the consented environment provides a baseline for the level of development on this site supported in the Arthur's Point and wider R&L context, which, as I described shortly, is a high-density environment. Resource consent was granted in 2008 for a mixed-use development including residential, visitor accommodation, commercial recreation and retail activity on the upper terrace of the site, which included 22 residential apartments contained within two buildings. These buildings were to be located where the now building restriction area 2 is located on the site.
Are you reading from the summary that we should have?
I do have copies.
Apologies.
Sorry.
I can pass that.
Yeah. Sorry about that. So I'm up to 2B. So resource consent was granted in 2018 for the construction of an 18 metre high 106 bedroom hotel and 80 service departments to be used for visitor accommodation. This consent has not yet been implemented. There are currently two resource consent applications being processed by the council. The stage one consent relates to the upper terrace of the site and is about to be issued on a non-notified basis. This includes 297 visitor accommodation units, of which 111 can be used for residential activity also. The stage two application relates to the mid-terrace of the site and includes 35 residential units. I agree with Ms. Turner's evidence that those parts of the site zoned medium density residential with a visitor accommodation subzone should be rezoned to high density residential as recommended in Ms. Turner's Section 42A report. However, I recommend that the remainder of the site also be rezoned to high density residential. I consider that those parts of the site zoned medium density residential should be rezoned to high density residential for the following reasons. There is very little flat land in close proximity to the town centre that is suitable for high density residential activity. High density zoning of this land would allow a greater range of housing densities and options. The site is anticipated to contain a higher density of development. Arthur's Point North is settled into the lower slopes of Mount Jura, immediately to the north of the Shotover River Canyon, with the Shotover River Canyon to the south. Increased height limits can be tolerated within these topographical features. Arthur's Point already contains a predominantly high density character, including residential and visitor accommodation activities, and the changing zoning of the land and changing the zoning of the land to reflect this character is consistent with objective 3.2.3 in the strategic direction chapter of the proposed district plan, which states a quality built environment taking into account the character of individual communities. High density residential zone is consistent with policy 3.2.1.1 of the strategic direction chapter, which states the significant socio-economic benefits of well-designed and appropriately located visitor industry facilities and services are realised across the district. I consider that building restriction area 2 should be amended so that the building restriction area covers only the western end of the mid-terrace as sought in Arthur's Point Land Trust submission. In this regard, I accept the refinement to building restriction area 2 proposed by Ms. Malsop and the consent controls suggested by Ms. Malsop, which do not require a non-complying activity status. I consider that the provisions applying to building restriction area 3, which covers the knoll at the front of the site, should be amended, as this area has the capacity to absorb development, and that development can be managed through design controls in the proposed district plan. In addition, I also consider that certain structures should be appropriate and consentable within building restriction areas, such as retaining structures or landscape features. I consider that the maximum building height on sloping sites in the high-density residential zone in Arthur's Point North should be 12 metres, given the topography of the site. I recommend that the high-density residential zone within Arthur's Point North should include visitor accommodation as a controlled activity due to the existing and anticipated visitor accommodation activities occurring in Arthur's Point North. The above recommendations are considered to give effect to the National Policy Statement Urban Development 2020, as they will enable urban development of a height and density which will contribute to the housing demand in Queenstown Lakes region while ensuring the development contributes positively to a well-functioning urban environment.
Can I ask you a question arising on the last paragraph?
Yeah, sure.
I understand your point that it gives effect to. Do you think that it's required, the changes you're supporting are required to give effect to it?
I don't consider that they are required to give effect to it. However, I think it supports what we're seeking. But I think that it's the council's responsibility as well to ensure that the NPS is given effect to, and ensuring that there is land for development.
The other question is, I was thumbing my way through the description of these various applications. Change the question I was asking Mr. Lincoln. If you have an existing consent and you apply to do something different, does it mean by definition that the existing consent is not likely to be exercised? Otherwise, you wouldn't have made an application.
I guess it's giving the client options. As Mr. Leckie discussed, the current owner of the land did not obtain that previous resource consent. No, I believe it should be further to the west.
So when you say accept the refinement of BR2 proposed by Ms. Malsop, so you're saying that what Ms. Malsop proposed in terms of the size or location is different from what ended up in Ms. Turner's
No, I believe Ms Turner did actually accept Ms Malsop's recommendation of the reduced size of the building restriction area.
Do you mean reduced from notified?
Yes, yes. Sorry, reduced from
this
notified.
This is figure 9, recommended mapping, zoning and overlays from Ms Turner's rebuttal.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, basically, are you happy with this or you wanted something different? Very hard to work out.
Yes, so in our original submission we sought that it was the western extent of that area only.
Yes.
So I consider that either the building restriction area should be removed or the controls of Ms Malsop's recommendations should be applied to that building restriction area. Alternatively, it should be reduced in size to the western extent
when you
only.
Say the western area, right? Mm. What do you
Do you need a plan?
No, I have not given a plan of that.
So how do we know you've looked at it? Is it Ms Malsop's report? No, she's
no, it's not. She's recommended
one.
That one.
All right. So say we just look at it in two bites. One is the location of it. And the second bite is what rules might apply.
Yes.
Okay,
exactly.
So if we were to accept your recommendation about the rules being different from Ms Turner's rules, and more like what you say Ms Malsop recommended, would you be happy with this shape of a BRA? Or do you still want, or do you still think it should be different?
If those rules were applied, then yes, I'd be happy with that shape.
Okay.
Of
but if Ms Turner's non-complying activity status was to be retained,
yes, then
you think some further refinement?
Yes, correct.
To generally to the west,
yes.
But without a map to show us exactly where. But
yes, correct.
The end of it. Okay, all right. So they're sort of a contingent one on the other.
Yes.
Question on that. Does this relate to on the legal evidence we've given, page 14, is a house by mix is built for, which has got units on it, which are built on not BRA, not BRA. Is that the sort of east-west delineation we're talking about? So, and from supplementary question, from that, can we assume that built form is no less than 8 metres?
I can potentially jump in there. That's from the earlier consent. So that would cover quite a lot of the BRA, regardless of whether it was moved or not. As on that plan.
So just me looking at that plan, I can look at 12 units in the BRA, which is the building construction area, and see that that's sort of what we're...
Can you just clarify which plan are you looking at?
Looking at the legal submission that was given to us, page 14, and there's the example of the site plan below from RM 184858, which is the 2018 consent. The level of development that has been accepted over BRA 2. Gotcha.
All right, now I think I have a better understanding of what the two alternatives that you are looking for.
Okay.
For BRA 2. The application that your clients put forward, that's still before the council, the stage 2 part relates to this Mindus Terrace, maybe part of the NRA. Would that have complied with the NDR rules? And what wouldn't? I mean, what height? There's 35 units, so it's not 297.
Yes.
So there's a scale than what's been approved or can't be approved in the high density. So I'm just trying to say, get an idea of what's proposed in that mid-tier is compared with the medium density zone.
So that development would meet the majority of the medium density zone requirements. I'd have to go back and check which rules it didn't comply with, but I believe it complies with the majority.
Because I mean, it seems that's possible given the scale. And the height's actually higher than medium density, isn't it? Say 8 metres high.
Yeah. My understanding is that that definitely complies with height.
But having said that, and your evidence is that that area should be zoned high density.
Yes, correct.
Just because it allows more development.
Yes.
Can you just, in terms of height in the high density zone, I found it quite hard to read those rules in the zone. Because there's one parallel.
And sloping, not sloping.
And sloping and flat. So I presume it would seem to be Queenstown for the purpose of that rule. And am I right to say that for flat sites, it's sloping height, which would apply up on the, in the roadside areas, but for sloping sites, it's 7 metres?
Yes, that's correct.
7 metres, yes. And you're saying that that should be 12 metres regardless of the slope?
Yes, so that rule, so it's 7 metres, and then if you do not comply with the 7 metres, it becomes a restricted discretionary activity. But then there's also at 9.5.3.4 the maximum building height of 10 metres, which if you don't comply with that, it's a discretionary activity.
Yes.
So
there's that sort of 3 metre band between 7
yes.
and 10.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. So what are you asking to become 12, the 10 or the 7?
The 10.
Oh, okay. So not the 7?
No.
All right. And you've seen the evidence of, I think it's Ms. Millsop, regarding the Article Woods site, where he's commented on the ability of a sloping site on that case above the road to accommodate sloping height, and she's saying from her landscape speaker she doesn't think they should accommodate it. I don't know, in that case maybe they are thinking of it as a permitted activity.
Yeah.
What's your response?
I believe it's a different site.
And you're just asking it for your site, not for the whole of Artist Point North.
The high density residential
part
of Artist Point.
Yes.
Yeah, not
yes.
medium.
Sorry, yeah.
But if your submission is to change the lower terraces zone for high density, it would apply to that lower terrace. Parts of it were sloping.
Of the mid terrace or
the mid terrace?
Yes, correct then, mid terrace, yes.
And then my last question is about the visitor accommodation. And at the moment in a high density residential zone, visitor accommodation is restricted discretionary, and there are various matters to consider. I've been looking at the objective and policy. I mean, what's your evidence about how controlled activities would achieve the objectives and policies related to this recommendation?
I guess it partly relates to the existing environment in Arthur's Point as well, where it is very much a visitor accommodation and residential environment. In terms of the objectives and policies, I guess taking into consideration that it's also contributing to a positive environment within that area in terms of facilitating development. And then I guess using controls to ensure that that development is consistent with the existing environment within that area.
So I still see that there is quite a significant change from the existing RB zone to a high density residential zone. And that the high density residential zone is essentially a residential zone. So the objectives relating to visitor accommodation and the policies are all about adverse effects on residential amenity values and traffic safety. They're really thinking about this as a residential zone, effectively, with maybe quite a lot of visitor accommodation. So, and it talks about ensuring that adverse effects on residential amenity are avoided, remedied, or mitigated. Explain to me how you think that controlled activity, which must be granted, and isn't sort of site specific in a way, and then you can put controls on it, you can't say, well, no, that site's no good. But how does controlled activity for visitor accommodation fit within this new, more residential focus for this area?
So I'm seeking the controlled activity on sites within the Arthurs Point area only. And again, it falls back to that existing visitor accommodation and residential activity within that area. So it is sort of specific to the Arthurs Point North area. So while it's not site specific, it is area specific. And I guess it's just providing for that existing visitor accommodation activity to continue, but also for new visitor accommodation to occur as well, within that context of an existing visitor accommodation and residential area.
So if you look at this area that's to be high density and it's quite more, are you saying that this area is really predominantly visitor accommodation? There might be some residential that comes into it or is there already, but it's a different balance of activities than other high density residential areas?
Yes. Yes, it is.
And there's not the same concern about protecting, ensuring that the site's suitable for protecting residential amenity?
No, I think it is a different context, yeah, given that there are existing visitor accommodation there.
Over much of the area?
I don't know the percentages, but I think it's a mixture of visitor accommodation and residential.
Thank you. That's all for me. Yes, that's right. Yes. What's the balance?
What the balance is. Well, I only have one question. It arises from my somewhat tongue-in-cheek question to Leahy about potentially sitting on a sharp fence bouncing different preserve walk different positions on consecutive days. He referred me to a key difference in the Skelton's systems. And Mr. Skelton also said, you of course don't labour on the problem of having already committed yourself yesterday. But Mr. Skelton also said that, in effect, any sites in this area were built on or consented. That qualifies now. I'm paraphrasing, but it's pretty close to his view that in effect the landscape position is giving way to a real world view. I'm not sure if that's his words.
Potentially, Mr. Leahy's paraphrasing.
But taking that at face value, does the Knoll, which is the R3, fall in that category that it's not already built on, not already consented, notwithstanding the landscape report that Leahy pressed on us, that would suggest would seem to support a greater level of restriction for that Knoll. Same is not the case down below, because we've already got consent over it. But at least for the Knoll, is there an issue about whether, if it's not a VRA, it should be an O&L. It probably wouldn't advance your client very much further either. But if there's a planning position, what do you think?
I would refer to Ms. Malsop's evidence which actually did discuss that BR A3 is the node, and I believe within her evidence she suggested that development could occur on the western side of that knoll, given the visibility would be limited from Arthur's Point Road if it was tucked onto the western side of that knoll. But otherwise, I couldn't comment on Mr. Skelton's evidence.
Very wise. Just to clarify, in your summary statement, in your opinion, the stage two applications for the 297 visitor accommodation units, which have been processed, how high is that?
Sorry, that would be the stage one consent, which is 297 visitor accommodation units.
Stage two is 35. After stage two, oh, 35 units, sorry. So how I want to, I sort of clarify the problem here, is I mean, there's no exact units here, but you rely on the offer of those allowed for 12. That's basically what it's right now. Thank you. Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. If I may, press you on BRA3 again, because there's a lot of evidence, a lot of weight, if you say, being put on Mrs. Melsop's evidence with regard to the capacity to absorb development. And I would just like to read the bit that's been quoted, which is, and I'll read it a couple of ways, but that's a good judge. And this is just to get it clear in my head, because I'm a simple counselor that needs some clarification. The area has some limited capacity to absorb sensibly designed ore. The area has some limited capacity to absorb. And then you've extrapolated that to, and this is on paragraph 30 of your evidence in chief, to say development is appropriate. Is that too big of a leap of faith?
I think the fact that Ms. Mousop made recommendations on the maximum building height and the building coverage, I don't think that's too much of a leap, because she did make comments on the type of development that would be she would consider appropriate.
And also, just to press it, was she referring to BRA 1 and 2, or specifically BRA 3?
So she was referring to the areas on her figure 6, which are shown in pink, which are the moderate landscape sensitivity areas, which is building restriction area 2 and 3. And building restriction 1 and 4 as well, which is outside of our site.
So specifically with regard to 3, am I to then understand that 2 and 3 can be considered as with equal relevance?
Correct.
So the fact that if you are arriving, and this may be a question, but if you're arriving from Corner Peak Road, and those two mounds, which is BRA 4 and BRA 3, are essentially the entrance, the transfer, they're like two big mounds outside the road that take you from a rural field to predominantly, and especially if you get a high density overlay, a very urban feel. And that BRA 3, to my eye, just seems to make that transfer. So how would you safeguard that transfer from rural to urban? Or am I getting that wrong? Am I seeing that wrong?
I mean, if you were to write the rule for what you said is appropriate on that knoll, what would it say?
That's a much better word for it.
I consider that what Ms. Mousel has recommended is appropriate for that knoll, which, as Mr. Leckie elaborated to, it's similar to a medium density residential zone.
She says very clearly in the rebuttal she does not consider medium density to be appropriate on that knoll, doesn't she?
But she has made recommendations in her original landscape assessment.
But she's her evidence in the rebuttal to you It's fairly specific. In my view, NDREs would not achieve this outcome for BRA3. So if you always think you've got a not NDRE.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying my recommendation is that it should be medium density, and considering those controls, or considering those controls, could be applied to. So I can read them again for you. So it's the maximum building height of 8 metres.
Well, she's saying here that 8 metres wouldn't be appropriate. In my view, 8 metres is likely to be visible when the square is 3 feet behind now.
Wouldn't it be her recommendations then and her original assessment? That's sort of a medium.
Well, she's obviously changed her mind or come out with a different view in her evidence, hasn't she? At least on the height. Thought how that could be implemented through a little set of rules.
No, I have not come up with my own rules.
Thank you.
Any more questions?
No. Sorry, I've been filed. No, it's all good. I'm just trying to.
Thank you. I think Gareth, yeah, probably might be after Ms. Redmond's. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I can exit stage right now for a while, not too long. Not tomorrow, in a few weeks' time. Thank you.
If you're happy for me to read from my summary. Thanks. My evidence covers my recommendations for the zoning of the land at 161 Arthur's Point Road at Arthur's Point. I agree with Ms. Turner's evidence that those parts of the site zoned MDRZ with the visitor accommodation subzone be rezoned to high density for the following reasons. Similar to the conclusions reached by Ms. Ryder, there's very little flat land in close proximity to the town centre that's suitable for high-density residential activity. Zoning this land high-density would allow a greater range of housing densities and options. Arthur's Point is nestled into the lower slopes of Mount Madura, immediately to the north, thank you, with the Shotover River Canyon to the south. Increased height limits can be tolerated within these topographical features. Arthur's Point already contains a predominantly high-density character, and changing the zoning to the land of this land to reflect this character is consistent with the strategic direction objective 3.23. It's also consistent with policy 3211, which I think you've just heard from. However, I recommend that the remainder of the site also be rezoned high density res, and so if that assists, you'll see from the recommendation that the northeastern corner of the site is proposed to be in the medium density. And thank you.
This corner here, sliver.
Yes, that's right. I've actually worked it out. It's about 2,500 square metres.
So 2,500 square
metres. Yep. 2,500. And at 3, I set out that the high density zone should follow the cadastral boundaries of the site to ensure consistency and clarity for future development of the site without added complexity. The fact that the northeast corner of the site falls within the toe of the slope and has a landslide area natural hazard overlay applied to it is not a reason to apply different zoning to this corner of the site from the rest of the site. The visual effect of a building within this northeastern corner of the site would be very similar whether it was zoned medium density or high density. And having split zoning for the site results in a more stringent activity statuses for the entire site due to the most restrictive activity status applying to the land when more than one standard is breached. That is referenced in the interpreting and applying the rules section. I recommend the visitor accommodation within the high density residential zone of Arthur's Point North have a controlled activity status that would provide for the existing and anticipated visitor accommodation activities that are occurring within Arthur's Point North. Arthur's Point is characterised by a predominantly high density character, including residential and visitor accommodation activities. And given the location of its proximity and its proximity to central Queenstown, I consider the activity status is considered appropriate. I can assist the commissioners too with the types of land uses that are out there at the moment. I would characterise Arthur's Point North as predominantly visitor accommodation at the moment. And I say that because if you refer to the map that's at the bottom of below my paragraph 4, there is obviously the subject site that I'm here today for is a hotel. The property to the immediately to the west is actually a staff. It's the Queenstown Resort College student accommodation, but it operates largely like visitor accommodation. It's been constructed in that manner. Across the road from that lodge is, I'm struggling to remember the name of it now, but it's a hotel. Can't quite remember the name. Then opposite the Swiss Bell, which is the Coronet Peak Properties land, some recently constructed apartments that a number of them have been granted VA consents as well. Then directly opposite Coronet Peak Properties land is the Gantleys and a collection of small businesses, picture framer, hot pools, things like that. And then you end up with Arthur's Point, who have consent and are applying for another consent for visitor accommodation. So I would say predominantly a visitor accommodation neighbourhood.
Particularly in that high density residential zone.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, when you get out to the medium densities, well, a lot of that's undeveloped at the moment. And then obviously heading off the page back towards Queenstown, you have that recent special housing area that's nearing completion.
It's Bullendale.
Bullendale, thank you. Which is obviously only allowed to be residential. I guess largely the proposition is, my evidence is, high density residential zoning is appropriate on the site. There's a slither of medium density which seems to have been identified because of this landslide natural hazard. That if you were doing your site visit, I think you would have noticed that there's an LPG tank at the eastern end of the property, quite a large above ground LPG tank. So it's that hill slope that's just behind that LPG tank. So it's densely covered in pine trees and wilding species at the moment. And that narrows as it heads towards the east behind the hotel block, behind the bowling alley is where about it terminates. Okay, there was one question you asked, sir, in your memo, and I don't know the answer, but the MPS 2020 and whether it's, I think you asked Ms. Ryder whether it's necessary. Sorry, I can't quite recall the term.
As I said, she said that the relief she was supporting gave a fit to it, and I asked whether the relief she was supporting, it was necessary to grant it in order to give a fit to it, which is not the same thing.
Hmm.
Development would be said to be consistent with that NPS, but that's a different thing
from saying a particular urban development is
necessary in order to give it to the NPS.
Right,
right.
I
see. That's the extension I was trying to.
Required.
Required.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, sir.
So you've been listening.
Sorry, you ready to hear from me now?
Yep. I should tell you that below our timetable books, we have shifted everything around to accommodate one of Council on the Clouds council commitments. So I can give you 10 minutes.
10 minutes a month, just fine. Thank you.
And obviously, we've heard your expert advisors. We know what the technical case is. So why don't you tell us when you were on site, you wanted to tell us about your vision.
Indeed.
That's what I'd like you to tell me. I don't know.
Yep.
I think it would be unwise to trespass into the planning sphere.
Mm-hmm.
That I think you'd better leave that to the expert. But we'd like to know what your vision is. But 10 minutes.
Thank you.
Go.
My time starts now. The
like the chase.
We've owned the property since 1991, and been wondering what to do with it ever since. And for much of that time, we've had the vision of turning it into something along the lines of the Centre for Alternative Technology in Powys in Wales, which we visited in the mid-90s, and also the incredible Nordic Volker Centre or Folk Centre on Jutland in Denmark, which we visited at the same time. These are renewable energy, energy efficiency in the built environment, and sustainability demonstration centres. These are technologies and strategies and philosophies that my wife and I and now our family have been fascinated by for decades, and we believe human society, human civilization must pursue those goals or we will fail. Well, the good news is now that's happening. The uptake of renewable energy systems is happening at a pace and on a scale around the world that what we didn't think we were going to see happen in our lifetimes is now happening, and happening very, very fast. As far as this particular property is concerned, the stock that you saw on site that day, the 85 cattle and the 160 or 70 sheep or whatever it is, and the 25 chickens, the chickens are ours, the rest are not ours, and we are not being paid to have those animals grazing on that property. We let a local farmer who has, not local in fact, he's got a couple of larger properties down south of the lake here at near Kingston. He approached me and said, look, would I be interested in doing a joint venture and seeing what the property could handle? And yes, we are. We know the property is not commercially viable, financially viable as a standalone agricultural production unit in this climate at that size. It used to be used in conjunction with many other surrounding farms. The ability to do that is rapidly disappearing. Those farms originally we were one of the smallest blocks between Lake Hawea and Wanaka. We're now pretty much the largest. Everything around us has been subdivided over those 30 years of our ownership, and now the property cannot be used as a standalone agricultural production unit. We want to keep it as open farmland, and we want to utilise our vision to do something and utilise my personal 30 years of investigating and studying renewable energy systems. There seems to be a match there. We started down the resource consent process several years and several million dollars ago, and I can tell you that some of the questions that have been asked by you commissioners today, why can't it just be done through resource consent? Well, for those of you who've not been through it on any but the most prosaic and pedestrian of scales, don't ever do it to yourself. It is a broken and invalid process that doesn't exist for the betterment of our community. It exists to keep thousands of bureaucrats and hundreds of consultants permanently employed, and it is in the direct personal financial interest of everybody involved to make the time horizons as long as possible and ramp up the costs as much as it's humanly possible to do it. And the people who play the game are very good at it. An absolute example to run this by you. You are aware there was a seismic report produced by Mr. Robert Bond, the man with the golden ruler, that pertained to our site. That was raised both in these proceedings for the rural visitor zone and in our latest resource consent that's on hold pending the result of this application. We already dealt with the seismic risk supposedly on the property 10 years ago during a resource consent there. Grant Meldrum, whose report you have as part of your evidence, dealt with that then. It was raised again by council, even though they knew it had been dealt with. And Mr. Bond's report just beggars belief. His conclusion and his building exclusion zone could not be supported on four different grounds on the 2015 report he cited. He neglected the fact that the glacial till is the most stable building platform where there is. We're sitting on 90 metres of it on a terminal moraine. He should have been using 1 to 10,000 scale mapping. He was using 1 to 250,000. You look at the legend of the mapping he was using at the fault that supposedly runs under our property, and he knows where it is so accurately he can draw a line 300 metres either side of it and said you can't build anything there. And the fault clearly says, the legend clearly says, the dashed red line, the fault is not accurately located. Then he also ignored the Ministry for the Environment's seismic building criteria system, which basically said almost any and all the types of buildings could be built on our property, irrespective of the perhaps existence of that fault. But then, of course, I hope you know that he completely ignored, and council officers completely ignored, the February 2019 Regional Seismic Risk Survey that replaced the 2015 one Mr. Bond used. And under that report, if there is a seismic fault at all under our property, its slip rate's been redefined from, I think it was 3.8 millimetres a year to about 2.25, and the recurrence interval from 5,000 years to 30,000 years. Well, how does a family, and here we are, this is Landscape Wanaka, this is Heron Investments, how does a family make that go away? Well, Batchelor McDougall's estimate for making that go away was $7,000 to $8,000. In fact, we got it done for a bit less than that by Mr. Meldrum and Mr. Forrest. And they've just made a mockery of Mr. Bond's report. This is what the resource consent industry does to people. So not a problem if you're Real Journeys or Naitahu or AJ Hackett, but if you're Rick and Juliet Deaton and their sons from Wanaka, let me tell you, it bleeds you white financially, and I don't have enough years left in me to keep fighting that fight. So it's either rural visitor zone for us or nothing. Now, as to the philosophy of the rural visitor zone, I think the key thing to consider there is in the middle word. Should it be visitor or should it be visitors? If you want it to be visitor, then let's leave it only in areas of outstanding natural landscapes, and let's have it be remote so the only visitors are going to be Brad Pitt and his girlfriend du jour arriving by private helicopter and paying 20 grand a night. If you want to do something real with it, if you want to relieve the incredible concentration of visitors and the pressure on a place like Wanaka or Queenstown, then we are offering the template on how to do it. this is what a rural visitor zone in this millennium should be about, as opposed to the backward-looking nonsense that you've had presented to you by council. Then if you want to know what's going to be happening as far as the rural industry in this country, man, if you don't think farmers in this country are going to be facing difficulties, I urge you to have a look at a guy called Tony Sieber on YouTube, and then have a look at his website, his think tank called RethinkX, and his vision of what's coming to global food production. The major section of it is called The Disruption of the Cow. So Tony Sieber wrote a book in 2014 called Clean Disruption. It delineated his ideas on disruptive technology. This man is a professor of disruptive technology from Stanford, and he presents to Deutsche Bank and Allianz Insurance and governments all over the world on his ideas on renewable energy. Everything he has said on renewables has come to pass. He's predicting the end of the automobile, the internal combustion automobile, by 2025, and the end of the usage of oil by 2030. He's now saying the same thing about agriculture. New Zealand agriculture is going to have changes to it. New Zealand rural community needs to be allowed to participate in the tourism bonanza, if it returns, of course. We have no idea whether that's going to happen. There are changes coming to forestry. I better not get into that. That'll take me into biomass as energy. And now, just getting back to the philosophy of what you folks have to administer and the document that delineates what is and isn't possible. I presume somewhere on your desk there's a copy of the district plan or somewhere nearby. I consider that a dead document that hangs like a dead albatross around our necks. It's 10 years out of date at least, and it takes 5 years to change. It's a completely backward-looking document when we need to be looking forward. There are changes coming our way that we can barely begin to imagine, and you folks are in the hot seat. You are considering what this community, this region, this country needs to do, and you are in a position, I hope, to maybe bring about some change. The district plan needs to have changes made to it, because nobody but the big end of town can do this, what we're trying to do through resource consent. It can't be done. You've got an totally adversarial system. You've got a local government area that will not engage. There is no way to engage with Queenstown Lakes District Council. I've tried and failed. The only people from that organisation that had been onto our property were paid to come there. They raised no flags with everything we proposed. Everything we've shown you was proposed to Erin Stagg 18 months ago. No red flag. Well, a couple of red flags she did raise, we wiped them. Anything down on Camp Hill Road, we wiped. We've installed hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of power and water infrastructure, done hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of architecture, and then 4 or 5 months ago, somebody at QLDC changes their mind, outstanding natural landscapes only. Well, that's great for Brad Pitt, but it doesn't help the Deatons. I've got to say something about energy. This process, resource consent, in my opinion, and the district plan considers nothing other, when it comes to the built environment, than subjective human aesthetic values and how that relates to the built environment. Let me tell you, the environment couldn't give a toss what colour we paint our buildings or how reflected the outer surfaces. It is energy usage that drives climate change, and you can't do energy any worse than a standard New Zealand timber frame building. I've been to 17 major building industry trade shows in Europe over the last 4 years. Building and renewable energy and biomass as energy. I've spoken to thousands of people at these shows. You describe a typical New Zealand timber frame building wall system to them, they think you're joking. You tell them that yes, we have some double glazing, but almost all windows in New Zealand are solid aluminium, non-thermally broken frames. They don't believe you. You haven't been able to buy windows like that or build walls like that in Europe for almost half a century. Europe is 100% triple glazed, and we're still struggling whether we can afford double glazed. And non-thermally broken frames, they don't exist. If you want to do something meaningful, you, when I say you, I mean Queenstown Lakes District Council and all local government areas in this country, we have to start speaking realistically about our built environment and how we create it. I've tried, I can't get through to anybody, so I intend to demonstrate it to them. But then you strike things like Mr. Bond and his fake science. It's very hard to know how to characterise a system like this that won't listen to anybody but the big end of town, that and general bureaucracy that only fully staffed, well-funded, large corporate entities can contend with, that's slowly choking the life out of small business across the board. Small builders, small operators, they just can't keep up with occupational health and safety and food safety and employment law and inclusion and equity and all the rest of it. It's just madness. I think I've said what I need to say, but what we are offering here is the reset of New Zealand tourism that national government says it's looking for. We've got a huge part of the scenic estate of this nation, the rural zone, that is not utilised and is not able to be utilised by tourism in any way, and that is embodied and embedded in the district plans of the local government areas of New Zealand, and it should change, and we're offering a template for how that change should take place in the most positive, beneficial way that sits as lightly on that piece of land as it's humanly possible to make it. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you taking my request in the spirit, which was vague. I'm sorry you had to wait so long.
That's okay.
We really did get jammed up,
yep.
And I was getting concerned with the people sitting behind you who expected to be going half an hour or three quarters of an hour before.
No, I understand. I'm grateful for the opportunity. Thank you for hearing me.
I appreciate you coming out, hanging with it and telling us.
Thank you.
We'll adjourn.